It's July and we still have coronavirus.
Yeah. It's finally come to Malawi and starting to spread here as well.
Yeah, we joined the club finally. So we're finally having local transmissions. And unfortunately, we just had our first death in our city this week. But it just is something that we were all hoping would be fizzling out by now, but is still here.
Yeah. So we're taking a lot of precautions here. We've ordered a bunch of cloth masks from our local tailor to give out to the church and been doing some social distancing and that kind of thing, just like most people in America have been.
Yeah, trying to follow the restrictions put out by the government, and they kind of change from time to time. It's somewhat hard to keep up with, but we are having our church services, but we're having two services where people from different areas are assigned to a service so that we keep the numbers lower, and we're getting everyone masks to wear mm-hmm. during worship. And but at the same time, it's not like we're just kind of treading water. We've broken some new ground. We started a men's prayer meeting. So as long as we're meeting in small groups with social distancing, we're able to do those things. And so we wanted to make sure the men were praying together. But you also launched our women's Bible study back again.
Yeah. And we've had growing numbers every week. I think this was our fourth week.
That sounds about right.
Of it. And this week we had, if I counted correctly, 17 women, not including myself and Janet, a translator, and probably about 7 toddlers.
Yeah.
It was a wild
time.
That's
wonderful. That's wonderful.
And we make a big circle that takes up the whole church room up there at the school.
Yeah.
So we can kind of spread out and keep our social distance.
And what have you guys been studying?
We're studying spiritual disciplines.
Yeah.
For new believers.
And people kind of interested and have a lot of questions, maybe?
I think so. Yeah. I've had some good questions. The book that I'm basing the study off of was written by a really famous author. His name's Dr. Joshua Hutchins. Have you heard of him?
Yeah. I think I've met him before. But it's a work in progress. Maybe we'll talk about that one day when it's finished. Huh?
It's a really good work in progress.
Yeah, we'll try. You're my guinea pig with this Bible study, and maybe one day we'll share it with our podcast listeners.
Okay.
Yeah. But this is a special episode because this week marks 2 years since we moved here.
Today actually, that we're recording this on the 16th of July, is exactly 2 years since we left America.
Since we left America. And then the 18th,
2 days later,
is 2 years since we arrived in Malawi. So which one do we commemorate?
Well, thinking about this last year, I developed this attitude of remembering the 16th a little more as a day of mourning, because it is kind of, it's sad that we're so far away from our friends and family and all the people that we love and having to leave them. So I commemorate this day as a little more of a sad thing, you know, that we left the people we love.
So this is Good Friday.
I guess so.
And then
the 18th
is Easter.
We celebrate. Yeah. And on the 18th, we celebrate the life that we have here and how much we love it.
Okay.
So we get a little bit of both.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Stacy Lee. We're missionaries in Malawi with Gospel Life Global Missions.
And this is the Gospel Life podcast, where we talk about missions, Malawi, and more.
In today's episode, we're reflecting on our first 2 years of living in Malawi.
So we've been in Malawi for 2 years. And what we'd like to do in this episode is talk a little bit about some of the behind-the-scenes things that we didn't share necessarily publicly. We shared with the people closest to us, but there's just certain things you don't share with everyone that you're going through in a big move like this that kind of just point to the spiritual warfare aspect of being a missionary and also to the continuing grace of God to get us through these 2 years and not just get us through, but I think I'd say we're doing pretty good even.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we're really thriving here. We love it.
So, this doesn't need to be like just a list of all the miseries we've faced. We don't want it to sound like that.
Right.
But we do want to share some of those things just as a real life picture to people out there.
Yeah.
So we go back to 2018. We moved in July 2018, but in June we decided to go out west with some of our kids and explore the great outdoors in Colorado and stuff. And right before that trip, and then especially on that trip, you suddenly developed this pinched nerve.
Yeah, a pinched nerve in my neck, and it made my hands and my arms somehow at the same time be numb and hurt really bad.
Yeah. And I remember us just driving through Kansas and through Colorado, and you would just be, it was mainly in your wrists that the pain would.
Yeah. Come. And I couldn't, like I had bought an embroidery kit that I wanted to do on the drive to keep myself entertained. I couldn't look down at it or my phone or anything that would, it would make it hurt. My arms go numb. I had to just look straight the whole drive, the whole 3,000 miles.
and so all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you get this pinched nerve where you're going to the chiropractor like every day or every other day.
Yeah, and he's like a great chiropractor, but it was not helping.
Yeah. And meanwhile, we're trying to pack like...
I'm packing 16 checked bags.
Yes.
And like 7 backpacks and several wheeled carry-ons.
And that's just the stuff we're taking with us. And then we're trying to get the other stuff into storage or sold. The house we're living in cleaned. I mean, it's just complete overwhelming chaos.
It was the most overwhelmed I've ever been in my entire life.
And you're in pain like you've never experienced before.
Yeah. That was super fun.
And then at the same time, July 4th of 2018, I came down with a fever.
Yeah.
Like an extremely high fever, like 102 around there. And that's not typical for me.
No, you were super sick.
I was so sick, I decided to go to urgent care in Murray, Kentucky, which is not something I do. I usually just grit it out and just get through
whatever. Yeah, we're ride it out kind of people. We're not go to the doctor people.
But I felt so bad, I went and I had strep throat. And that entire 4th of July and then...
all the goodbyes.
The days after we had big family photos and I'm just like forcing a smile onto my face because I feel awful. I have strep throat. I'm fighting strep throat. Well, get over it. We moved to Malawi. Thankfully, after a little bit, your pinched nerve goes away.
Yeah, not immediately after we got here, but probably within a month, it just completely stopped.
Yeah. But me, on the other hand, I keep having this recurring fight with strep throat. Like every couple of weeks, I could feel the infection in my throat. I'd be getting a fever.
It felt like every couple of days to me. It just randomly spike fevers and be really sick. Yeah, just constantly.
And then all of a sudden my lymph nodes are swelling to like crazy sizes.
I'm convinced you had lymphoma there for a while.
It was basically like I was growing another head out of my
neck. It was really swollen.
Yeah. But I didn't have lymphoma. I probably had mono,
yeah,
even though it was never tested. But all the signs pointed to the fact that I had mono. And for 3 months, I think it was, I was just exhausted.
Yeah, the first 3 months that we were here, while we were all going through transition stress and all that fun stuff, not sleeping, jet lag, and Daddy is sleeping on the couch sick.
Because I had mono.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it just kind of left.
Yeah.
A lot of people, they have mono and they deal with it for even 6 months. But then for me, it just went away after about 3 months and haven't really dealt with it since. But it's one of those things that you know that you should expect, that when you're making a huge move in faith, that things like this are going to happen.
Yeah. But I think your health is one of the biggest ways that you can be attacked in spiritual warfare.
And it's just an opportunity, really, for, yes, it's a satanic attack, but we know that God is even sovereign and over Satan. Satan can't do anything without God permitting it to be done. And we see this in the book of Job, where Satan has his motivations, but God's still using Satan's prideful motivations in order to demonstrate his glory and his power in the life of Job. And so we see at the same time the spiritual attack, but at the same time God's power coming into those circumstances.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to get to be a part of.
But I mean, there's just, we could keep going and going through these 2 years and mention thing after thing. We probably would bore our listeners, but I know you had two uncles who have died since we've been here.
Yeah, and they were both fairly soon after we moved here.
And you weren't able to be there with your family when they died.
Yeah, that was really hard.
The kids have all had malaria in those first few months that we moved here. All five of them took their turns. It's just, there's been one thing after another. We experienced a church split at the church we were originally attending that was very difficult and hurt us very deeply at the time, but was also what led us to start Gospel Life Baptist Church. If that church split hadn't happened, we wouldn't have started this new church that is really standing strong for the gospel.
Yeah.
So it's just, am I forgetting something major that you think we should throw in there?
Remember those several months when we had some unidentified kind of bug in our bed?
Yes, yes.
We never saw a bug, but for months we would wake up with bites all over our torsos.
And yeah.
I thought I was going to lose my mind over it.
We thought there were no fleas.
No.
These weren't mosquitoes.
They weren't.
They
weren't anything you could see with the naked eye.
They weren't bed bugs even, because bed bugs leave like the trails and the mattresses and stuff.
And specific bite patterns that we knew.
To this day, we don't have not identified this.
No, I have
mite
no.
Or
was it when it got cold that they finally went away, or was it rainy season?
Well, they finally went away because we had a mattress topper, and in frustration one day I burned it.
Was that what it was?
Yes.
Well, good.
I burned the bugs.
That was maddening. And I mean, we were like losing sleep. I was up half the night just itching. It was, I thought I was going to lose my mind.
Yeah. And it was just us. It wasn't, thankfully, it wasn't in the kids' beds or anything. It was just us. And apparently that mattress topper had been infested by
a mystery bug. My best guess from all of my Google research is that it was probably some kind of mite that came out of the trees that overhang our window.
Oh.
That's a thing. especially from like birds' nests.
Okay.
I don't know. We never saw any mites, but that's my best guess.
Yeah.
So we mentioned some of the hard things that we've been through, but God has also provided for us in huge ways. And yeah, there have been so many blessings and good things in the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
We already mentioned the church that we're able to start as a result of that church split. And it's doing so well.
Yeah. And you can really see people beginning to understand that this isn't just about going to a place and singing some songs on Sunday, which is kind of the problem we had at the other church. Was there a lot of people who just didn't know or believe the gospel, but were going to that church?
Yeah.
Which resulted in a church split. Imagine right. that. But we're really seeing people kind of get the idea that this is about trusting in Jesus and giving your life fully to him.
Mm-hmm. It's been really exciting.
Yeah, we're seeing people confessing sin in our worship services. I mean, that's unheard of in America, but it was really, you know, really unheard of in the previous congregation, that someone would stand in front of the congregation and say, I did this. It was sin. I want your forgiveness. I want this church to help me live a godly life. And we've seen that happen repeatedly in our church.
Yeah. You finished the first year of your residential program.
Yes. Well, almost. We were canceled by coronavirus a week early, but basically we finished the first year, and we hope that maybe by October we can start up the second year.
Yeah, so that was an exciting first year.
Yeah.
Something you've been planning for a long time.
That's right. That's right.
The kids are thriving, I feel like. Mm-hmm. The younger three are going to a local school here.
Where they were.
Before coronavirus.
This is Abraham, our four-year-old. He like splits time based off of coronavirus. So he'll just say, before coronavirus, I went to school.
Yeah.
So in his mind, BC does not stand for before Christ. It stands for before coronavirus.
He asked me today if we could go swimming after coronavirus.
Yeah. Maybe.
Also, it's way too cold right now, bud.
Yeah.
But so they before coronavirus, we're going to school here and really enjoying it. And Jude has an amazing tutor.
Amazing.
Who's just done incredible things for him. And we are so grateful for her.
Just to give people an insight, if you're not familiar with special needs, there's just a perfect combination in a person who can help kids with special needs of, how would you put it, of toughness, but also gentleness.
Yeah, like firm, but also very patient and kind.
Yeah.
And she is just right in that sweet spot. Yeah. And she's just been fantastic.
Yeah, sometimes you get the firm, but then you lose the kindness.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get the kindness, but the person just can't be firm enough.
Mm-hmm.
But to tell that story, in the beginning of this year, I was hiring an assistant, and it came down to two main candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And I hired one, and I called the other to tell her that she didn't get the job. And when I tell her, I can tell that she's holding back tears on the phone. Not the funnest thing in the world to do as a boss. But then like an hour later, we're talking about who can we get to work with Jude? And I was
because his tutor that he had just had to quit. She was pregnant and very sick.
Yeah. And I was like, well, I just told this girl that she didn't get the job with the mission that she had applied for. And she's an education major. And and so maybe you could call her. And it just turned out that the Lord had the right person for my assistant.
Mm-hmm.
Janet is amazing at her job.
Yeah.
But he also had the right person in Grace
for
to
Jude.
Help Jude. And he brought both of them into our life in that way.
And they, I mean, speaking of blessings, you just want to sing Janet's praises for a minute because she's been a huge blessing to us.
Yeah. At the beginning of this year, I decided I'm going to hire an executive assistant, and it's so that it'll free me up to do the things that are more important, and instead of my energies being focused on admin things. And of course, people who are in executive roles in the US know this, that but you multiply that in a place like Malawi, where going to the bank can take an hour or two of your time.
Yeah.
Going to a government office can take 3 or 4 hours because of inefficiency. And so I was doing all of that, and now I don't. And so that means that time is freed up to focus on the ministry and vision things and writing things that that only I don't want to sound prideful, but that God has called me to do.
Right.
Instead of doing the admin things that other people can do.
Yeah. And she's worth 10 times what we're able to pay her. She's...
Don't let her. Sometimes she listens to this. Don't let her know she's worth 10 times that we can pay her, or she'll want a raise.
No, she's really great. She's been a huge blessing.
And she also works as a translator too, especially for your women's Bible study.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's been great. We make a good team with the Bible studies.
In the past, when Kiki was here, before coronavirus, as Abe would say, we had to have male translators in women's Bible studies, and that just was awkward.
Yeah.
And so having Janet, I think, has really changed the environment for the
Bible study. She's just A+. Yeah. We could talk about Janet all night. Yep. Another huge thing for us, huge, amazing, like up there with Janet, is our weekly dates.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So this is not like regular dates is not a thing that we've ever had the freedom to do.
We used to probably be a little snobby towards people who had weekly dates. Like, who do you think you are with your weekly dates? We're lucky to have one every 6 months.
I don't know if that's snobby. I was more jealous.
I mean, well, we thought we were tougher than them or something.
Yeah, but so it's been great. Every Friday, almost every Friday for lunch, mm-hmm. We leave the kids here. Grace is here, Jude's tutor, and we also have our house helper, Joanna, and Haley and Joanna cook lunch together. And between the two of them, they watch the kids, mm-hmm. and we go for just an hour or two across town to a little restaurant that we love. And
yeah, Casa Rosa, if you're ever in Zomba, Malawi.
Yeah, it's the best.
It's an Italian restaurant run by a real Italian couple. Yeah. Who are so sweet and a blessing to us. But I think that before we started that, when did we start that? In December or January?
I don't remember.
Maybe it was in January after Grace started working.
It was
with
after
Jude.
Grace, yeah.
Before that, I'd say the first year and a half that we were here, our marriage had never faced the size of challenges that we faced during that year and a half.
Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, we're talking, we've been through a lot in our marriage before ever moving here. We had a child with autism. We've been through adoption from foster care.
The trauma that goes along with that.
Yeah. We've struggled financially. Like,
never not struggled financially.
Yeah. But we really struggled back then.
Yeah.
And so we've always had hardships, but during that first year and a half, mm-hmm. here was probably the first time that we really, really had a breakdown in our, I don't know, communication, in our just feeling like we were on the same team for a little bit.
I think we were both just so deep in survival mode.
Yeah.
That it was just, yeah, it was super hard.
Our anniversary in 2019, we both hardly spoke to each other that day.
I mean, our commitment to each other has never wavered.
Yeah.
But we didn't like each other all of last year.
Yeah.
I mean, no, not all of last year. We didn't like each other, but
There were
parts of last year where we really didn't like each other very much.
Yeah. It wasn't an entire year.
Right.
But it was some intense moments. And so just making that a priority and being blessed with the people that we could just leave the kids with and have a place that we go to every Friday, and we mostly order the same thing every Friday. Yeah. I think one day they had it ready in the kitchen and we surprised them and ordered something different. And they were like, wait, what? You're not supposed to order that. You're supposed to order your regular stuff.
Yeah, but it's been great. And I really feel like on this side of it, our marriage is stronger than ever.
Yeah, definitely. And just it took that to really get inside each other's struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in marriage, you always have these like patterns of each of you have a weakness that gets on the nerves of the other one. And you have these patterns of some, this person does this and you respond in this way, and it just escalates in different ways. I'm not saying we don't still fight that, but I think we understand each other's habits and patterns and weaknesses a little bit more from just like we had to get into each other's mind a little bit more.
Yeah. But I mean, it was miserable to walk through, but it's pretty cool to be on this side of it and just feel closer than ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And
so that was both a struggle and a blessing, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, all struggles are blessings, right?
That's true.
That's what James says in James chapter 1, to count it all joy, my brothers, when you face trials of various kinds.
That's very true.
Yeah. And that's because those trials are the testing of the genuineness of your faith that brings about the maturity of your faith.
Mm, yeah. And it reminds me too of the, where is it that he says, suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope, and hope does not put us to shame.
Yeah, that's Paul in Romans.
I thought it was Romans.
Yeah. Chapter,
I'm really bad at remembering where these things
five,
are.
I believe.
Okay. Yeah, so we've been through a lot of that. Time for our cultural tidbit.
So today we thought we would talk about the tribes of Malawi just a little bit.
Yeah. So before Europeans came to Africa and drew country lines everywhere, the Africans just lived in tribes.
Similar to America.
Right. Yeah.
And tribes, especially in Malawi, a lot of them have migrated through their history.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still people have a tribal identity that is important to them, more or less, depending on where they live or their family. Or some people it's really important, some people it's completely unimportant.
Yeah. And then when the Europeans drew the country lines, they didn't really think about the tribes. I'm not really sure how they made those decisions, but they just threw a bunch of tribes together into countries and separated tribes, you know, mm-hmm. into different countries and all kinds of mess. So Malawi has how many tribes do you think?
Oh, there's there's a ton of tribes that are, if you get into all the minor, smaller tribes, there's just a crazy number of them. But there's only a limited number of major tribes.
A handful of main ones in Malawi.
So the most well-known would be the Chewa tribe. Mm-hmm. And so the main language in Malawi is Chichewa, which is the language of the Chewa tribe. But it's mainly in central Malawi is their heartland, mm-hmm. where Lilongwe, the capital, is.
And fun fact, the Chewa tribe intermarried with pygmies, right?
Yes, yes.
And that's why they are, on the whole, pretty short people, right?
That's my theory. Actually, some of the histories say that the Chewa tribe killed all the pygmies.
Oh.
But I've just known some very short people here, and I'm not a tall person, and they're short to me. So my guess is that some of them intermarried with the pygmies.
Maybe they killed the men and took the women for wives.
Maybe. Pygmies were the original, as far as we can tell, natives of the land that's now called Malawi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then the Chewa came from like what today is the Congo and migrated here and invaded. And then, of course, there's in where we live, one of the main tribes is the Yao, mm-hmm. which is primarily Muslim. And some of them still speak their native language, Chiyao. But many of them just speak Chichewa and then, of course, English and other languages, too. And then we also interact here a lot with the Lomwe people, and they're over towards Mozambique. And then we have the Sena in Lower Shiri. And then the other big tribe is the Tumbuka, which are way up north towards Tanzania. But then there are other smaller tribes as well.
So I don't really know. Do you know what distinguishes the tribes from each other?
So obviously there's history. A tribe is just like a huge family, right?
Yeah.
And we see that even in the Bible when we say the tribe of Judah and that kind of thing. But also most of the tribes have their own language that separates them. Although, for example, the Lomwe in Malawi have basically lost their Lomwe language, even though it's still surviving, from what I understand, in Mozambique across the border. But the Lomwe in Malawi just have lost their distinct language. But if we go to Lower Shiri, then we hear a lot of Sena, the people speaking their local language. In the Yao are pretty strong.
Sena, right?
Well, it depends who you talk to.
Okay.
Yeah, the Chi is mainly in Chichewa and Chiyao. They use that prefix to mean the language of those people. But I think the Sena, in their language, they don't add the...
Oh, really?
The Chisena. Yeah.
Because English is Chizungu.
Yes, which is the language of the Azungu.
Which is the language of the white people.
Yeah. Yeah. The actual formal name in Chichewa is Chinglazi.
Oh, really?
The language of the Nglazi, the English. But the word that's actually used on the street is Chizungu.
Yeah.
So the language of the Azungu, the foreigners. So there's language, but there's also differences in customs. And some of that has to do with the witchcraft, which Isaac and I just had a two-part series, if you want to go back on your podcast and listen to some of that. But even down to when you marry, whose family or whose village are you going to live with? So if I am Chewa or I'm Yao, then the husband is going to move to his wife's village. And because they have a matrilineal society, because the thinking is that the children are going to belong to the family of the wife, not the family of the husband.
Yeah.
And the reason is because you know they're hers. Whereas
which is a good point.
You don't necessarily know
they're, for sure that they're his.
They're his.
It's true.
You know they're hers. So the wife's family claims the children.
Hmm.
Whereas with the Cinna, the you move to your husband's village, and there's a more patriarchal society and there's also more of a bride price that you pay in the Cinna culture and some of the other tribal cultures.
But in the cities, this is starting to break down.
Yeah, like Isaac, who I had a conversation with again in the last podcast, two podcasts, his mother is Lomwe, his dad is Yao, and he just said he grew up in Blantyre. He says, I'm just Malawian.
Yeah.
So he doesn't really claim any tribal identity. But in the villages, it's still stronger. But it's not as strong in Malawi as it is in some other parts of Africa. So there's a lot of intermarrying across different tribes and things. So it's not as distinct as mm-hmm. I believe it is in some other areas. I think there's probably one more major struggle that we haven't mentioned yet. That was something more recent.
Yeah, just you know, we felt like we were kind of hitting our stride this year, and things were going fairly well. God gave us a big surprise in a surprise pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And that, as you may or may not be able to figure out from the fact that we've been married for 14 years and have one biological kid, that just doesn't happen to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a huge surprise. And then it was only not long, less than a week after we found out that we found out that pregnancy was not going to make it.
Yeah. So you took the first pregnancy test on a Wednesday, because mm-hmm. I remember I had a prayer meeting on Wednesday mornings, and I picked up the test for you, and it was positive, which was a huge surprise, and I couldn't breathe.
Can't tell you how unexpectedly shocking this was.
It's not like we were attempting this. It just happened.
Yeah.
And but after a little bit of remembering to breathe, we were getting ready for it. We were thinking of all the plans and things. We're trying to brainstorm how we were gonna, you know, once you have that positive pregnancy test, it doesn't matter whether you were planning it or not, it's coming,
right? And we were excited.
Yeah, we were excited. It was a surprise, but and it wasn't something we would have planned, but here it was. So we were getting on board with it. But knowing that you have had miscarriages in the past,
mm-hmm.
but of course we knew that we really needed to watch this closely, because we had lost two children in the past.
Two miscarriages. Yeah. The last one was ectopic.
Yeah. The first was a miscarriage, and the next one was ectopic pregnancy. That and both times were kind of scary in the way they worked out, especially the ectopic pregnancy. You almost lost your life.
Yeah.
So you're going to the city, getting your tests done mm-hmm. in order to check your levels. And then, so that was on Wednesday. We got the positive pregnancy test. On Monday, you go back for...
Well, Friday, I went for the first blood test.
Yeah.
And they were on the low end of normal.
But higher than your hormone levels were higher than your other pregnancies that you had lost. It looked very positive.
Promising.
For
yeah.
You,
yeah.
Knowing your history. And then you went on Monday and it was gone.
It was it had gone down a lot. Yeah.
And it was quite the blow.
It was.
I think I'll just speak from my perspective that, I don't know, I just felt like, this one, even though it wasn't planned and it was going to be difficult to make it all work, I was ready for it, and I felt like this must have been the Lord that was giving us this mm-hmm. pregnancy after all these years that we couldn't, and I just was not ready for those results on that Monday when they came.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it hit you a lot harder than it did me. I feel like I've gone through this roller coaster so many times of hoping for a baby, even just, you know, hoping each month that I might be pregnant and being disappointed, that I was maybe a little more calloused. I was crushed for sure, but more calloused to the whole experience than you are. You were pretty distraught by it.
Well, I think the first miscarriage, you had to have a surgery, and I was taking you to the hospital and I was worried about you. And the second miscarriage was ectopic pregnancy, and you're having a really emergency surgery mm-hmm. with that. And I was just thinking about you, and I don't feel like maybe I ever felt the loss of the children with yeah. those, because I was just so worried about you being okay. And this one, thankfully, by the grace of God, was very easy mm-hmm. on you physically, very safe. And it allowed me to really feel the impact of the loss of the child. And then, of course, we're getting older too. So I don't know, it's just different
yeah.
when it feels like it's your, I mean, we have 5 children and we're completely okay with the number 5. But I don't know.
5 is a lot.
Yeah. We do not need 6 children.
No, but at the same time, it's something that, you know, we'd been hoping and praying for 10 years.
And then, you know, it just feels like at this age, I know, maybe it's weird to some people, because some people today, they don't get married until they're our age, and then they're having babies in their 40s. But for us, and already having 5 children, it just kind of feels kind of maybe final or something.
Yeah.
That it's the end of a stage of life.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's hard.
Yeah. And it really took the wind out of our sails.
It did.
And, we just kind of moped around here for a while.
A couple weeks. Yeah.
We had people praying for us, people that we shared it with. But once you share it with your pastors and your family, it's one of those things that you don't want to just be telling everyone the same story over and over again.
Yeah.
You just get tired of it, and you just kind of keep it to yourself, and you don't want to post it on Facebook or anything like that. And so it just kind of, you deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like you said, when we were going through the aftermath of it, just kind of felt like, can't we have anything easy?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, we've had a difficult, I mean, there's always somebody who has it more difficult than you, and there's always people that have it easier than you.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all on this linear line of comparison, and you can always see somebody who you think, man, they just, they have zero problems. And then, you know, if you're really honest and you do the hard work, you can think of how things could be worse. And there are people who are struggling with so much more than you struggle with. But at the same time, you know, in our life, we have a child with a special need. We have children that we adopted from foster care, and there's struggles with that. Mm-hmm. And it just, I don't know, you almost feel sometimes that God owes you something.
Yeah, which is not true at all, but you can kind of feel that way.
Yeah, that he why can't we just have one child, one pregnancy that goes as planned, that goes easy, that everything
Jude's,
turns out.
Jude's pregnancy and birth were really difficult. Yeah. And I was really hopeful to have just one normal. I really wanted to have a natural birth.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. But at the same time, I was talking to a pastor a few days after we found out the news, and he apologized to me afterwards because he felt like he had gone from feeling my hurt to the biblical lesson of trusting God and mm-hmm. his sovereignty and stuff. He felt like maybe he had done that too quickly, but at the same time, that's what all this is supposed to point us to, is that, yes, it's not the way we would have planned it, but it's the way he's planned it. And either in these situations, you become bitter because he didn't plan it the way that you would have planned it, or you trust him. You trust him in his character and his love. And that's the choice of faith that you have to make.
Yeah. I had to keep reminding myself, and it's a good reminder all the time that God loves us mm-hmm. and he's in control and he's never surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just know that as we think about ministry here in Malawi for 2 years, this is the place where the prosperity gospel is king.
Yeah.
And there are people all around us who just don't understand a biblical view of suffering. That it's either God's going to give you prosperity because you have strong enough faith, or nothing.
Yeah.
And if it's nothing, if it's not prosperity, then it's your fault because you didn't have the strong enough faith to manipulate God into giving you what you want.
Or you didn't send the prosperity preacher enough money.
Yeah. And I was counseling a guy who's getting married a few weeks ago, and I knew he kind of came from some of these churches, these prosperity churches. And that was the one thing that I really tried to hit very hard with him, was that the greatest blessings in marriage come through the suffering that you endure together mm-hmm. and how that draws you closer to God. And by drawing you closer to God, draws you closer to one another. And I could just see in his face that he was just having such a hard time processing it, what I was saying. He didn't disagree or argue with me, but it was just so opposite of everything he had heard in churches and on TV and the radio that, as Paul says in Acts chapter 14, that through many hardships, we must enter the kingdom of God. It mm-hmm. just didn't calculate with him.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why we're here. Maybe that's why we've experienced all we've experienced.
Yeah, to suffer and bear witness to God's goodness in it.
And I think that gets us to maybe something somewhat related. Obviously, we're dealing with this global pandemic that none of us could have planned and expected. And on our side, we were supposed to have teams and interns and teammates and all kinds of ministry activities happening these last few months that just are gone. They haven't happened. And on the side of churches in the U.S., they have all these mission trips that they were planning back in maybe November that probably none of them have happened.
Yeah.
And
church camps, Disciple Now kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I think that this situation reveals to us something important about global missions. And that is the very minimal impact that short-term missions really has, that mission trips really have on the world.
Yeah.
Mission trips aren't a bad thing. They can be very good, and they can have a big impact, especially on the people who go on them. But you can't have a mission strategy as a church or as global Christianity. Our mission strategy cannot be short-term mission trips.
Yeah.
Because something like this happens and those people aren't here. But even bigger than that is that people are not going to be impacted by seeing 2 weeks of your life. Or I should say, people are going to be very minimally impacted by seeing 2 weeks of your life.
Yeah.
But people are going to be eternally impacted by you giving your life to them.
Yeah.
And seeing you up close when, you know, our team knows we had a miscarriage and they see us dealing with it and they see us walking through it together as a family. And everything that we face, the team and the pastors we serve and the church that we're a part of, they see it, they experience it, and they grow from our suffering in a way that you just can't replicate in a 1 week or a 2 week trip.
Yeah.
And when coronavirus hits or something happens and all the airplanes are on the ground, that doesn't stop the mission of God if we're investing in career missionaries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So really the big takeaway from all of this would be that if you're thinking about missions, long-term missions, expect suffering.
Yeah, there is no global missions without suffering. And we see that biblically. Obviously, Christ is the prime example that he suffered and he died on our behalf. But as messengers of the cross, we embody the cross.
Yeah.
And we become the visual aid. Our lives are the visual aid to the gospel of the cross that we proclaim.
Mm-hmm.
And God is ordaining suffering in our lives to display the glory of Jesus Christ through our suffering. And we're not going to the world saying, hey, we have our lives all together and everything is perfect for us, and so become a Christian. We're going to the world saying, we come with the message of a Savior who loves you and suffered for you, and we're suffering to come to you with that message so that you can have the joy of eternal life.
Yeah, so don't be surprised by it when it happens.
Yeah, be completely prepared.
And on the other side, know that if you know missionaries who are overseas, they're probably suffering in significant ways that they're probably not sharing with everyone.
Yeah. I mean, when these things happen, you can't just post them on Facebook or Instagram. That's just not the appropriate place. And even in your prayer updates, they're going out so widely, it's hard to communicate certain things like this.
Yeah.
I mean, we try to be pretty honest, but at the same time, there are some things that are just in the moment so personal that you can't just be putting it out there for the world.
Yeah. And like, it's one thing for us to talk about it here where we can explain it more, but can you imagine putting in a prayer email, hey, our marriage is struggling. Yeah. Pray for us.
Yeah.
Like you just don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially in the midst of it.
Yes. Which is probably when you need the prayer the most, but that's stuff you don't share.
You share with the people who are closest with you and who are especially have a pastoral,
role
in your life.
Yeah.
But you don't just share that publicly. But at the same time, you just need to know as Christians and as churches that when you're praying, there's so much more going on than you're aware of at any moment.
And I've shared with a few people here and there who just had a really well-timed, hey, how's it going? Like, is there anything I can pray for you about?
Yeah.
You know, and I just felt, it just felt right to open up to those people. And so never be afraid to send messages to missionaries, you know, just asking.
Yeah. And really only in eternity will we see how everything fit together.
Mm-hmm.
How, you know, we were at this point of difficulty and struggle, and this senior saint in a nursing home prayed for us at that moment because the Holy Spirit laid it on her heart, and God sent an angel to open the pathway for us to do something, and we didn't even know what was going on in the spiritual realm. And but it was all the time. Oh, in the book of Daniel, Daniel prays, and he's praying for 2 weeks, and then finally an angel appears and explains, the moment you prayed, I was sent off, and I've been in battle this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm here to strengthen you. And so that's the thing about prayer, is we're just, sometimes you feel like you're just saying meaningless words, but there are real actions that are taking place that we may never know in this lifetime, but one day we're going to just feast on the knowledge of everything that God was doing that we didn't understand at the moment.
That's really something to look forward to.
It's everyone's favorite segment.
What you reading?
What you reading? So, what you reading?
I have just started a really good book called Mother to Son. It's written by Jasmine Holmes, who is Vodi Bakum's daughter.
Uh-huh.
And it's a series of letters that she's written to her Black son about his identity in Christ and hope in Christ. And I'm not very far into it at all yet, so I can't make lots of comments, but there's a lot of literature being recommended right now in the midst of this Black Lives Matter movement, which I think is great. And just some of it is more helpful than others.
Yeah.
And I think this one is really Christ-centered, God-focused, and also helpful.
And since we're the parents of two Black sons,
right,
then it hopefully it will be helpful as we try to, as white parents, try to help them prepare for a life in a world that isn't always fair and just for people that have their skin color.
Exactly. I've been making it a point for a few years now to read more African and African American authors. Mm-hmm. And so this one came up at a great time.
I'm reading God, Greed, and the Prosperity Gospel. I just got this for a $2.99 Kindle deal. And the author is Kosti Hinn.
And Benny Hinn.
That is Benny Hinn's nephew. And this is this book goes through his testimony of growing up as Benny Hinn's nephew and how he came to true faith in the true gospel and just the journey. It reminds me of another book by I'm forgetting the author, but the title of the book is Seeking Allah, Finding Jesus, where the author is, he was a Muslim and he goes through his process of in the events in his life that led him to become a Christian. Well, this is the same thing, but with the prosperity gospel and where he grew up just assuming faith healing was true. And then events in his life, and we'd say the sovereignty of God, brought people into his life to lead him to true faith in the gospel. So it's very interesting. So that's what we're reading.
Thanks for listening. You can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Gospel Life Go.
God provides for the needs of Gospel Life through your prayers and gifts. To become a prayer or giving partner, go to gospellife.org.
We hope you join us in glorifying God by growing disciples who make disciples. We hope that you live a gospel life.